Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson here with Lisa Murphy. Lisa, we've got one of my favorite topics. It's the topic where one of us doesn't know what the topic is until we start the show. This time, I'm the non-topic knower. What are we talking about?
Well, it's not the topic. It's just that I had a story, an experience last night, and I figured you are witty and adept enough that we can find a way to link this back to early learning.
Okay? Oh, I'm so excited.
I know. But I always get worried that it's going to sound a lot more sexier than it probably really is. But to me, it was kind of funny. So last night, we were cleaning up after dinner, and Caddyshack came on as a movie, right? Probably many of our listeners have listened or watched, familiar with Caddyshack. Maybe some of you aren't. If you're not, don't worry about it. It's one of those classic 70s comedies with, you know, like Chevy Chase and Bill Murray. And anyway, and so we're kind of half listening, half watching because we're cleaning up from dinner. Plus we've all seen it, you know, 100 times. But then I happened to look at the screen at one point where the actual golf caddies had like this little like place that they would go in. And anyway, so they walk in and over the archway in this little like break room place, it said Caddy Shack. And I looked at Pablo and I said, oh, shut up. Is that why the movie's called Caddy Shack? Like in my brain, I never put it together that it was that it was named after the caddy's
shack.
And so I was in the moment, he's looking at me like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, dude, for real, it never clicked in my brain that it was named after the shack of where the caddies went. My brain, I think I thought it was just one word. And I think here's the link without forcing it to link it to early childhood is like, I didn't know that I didn't get it until I was 51 years old. And today on my run before we started recording, I was like, okay, let's not force to try and turn this into an episode, but is there room here for it to be an episode? Like I could totally see myself as an adult getting frustrated with a child when I'm like, duh, like, don't you know? Like it's so obvious. And if you don't know, you don't know.
It's that aha moment. It's that light bulb popping up above your head is what it is. And that's totally what happened to you.
He looked at me like, what? And I was like, oh. And then I was like, I never got it.
I think that happens to adults all the time. I mean, people do this. There's a couple of podcasts I listen to, and they talk about song lyrics that come up once in a while, and people hear one thing, and then they actually look at the lyrics, and they're saying a totally different thing. It's kind of that kind of thing. I had this experience a couple weeks ago, doing a online session with a friend of the show, Tamar Jacobson. So Tamar is all about, hey, look back on who you are and how you became who you are, because it has an impact on who you are in the classroom. And this woman in the session, been working as a caregiver for 3+ decades, And she had this realization that a lot of the struggles behavior-wise she was having with kids were related to things that went on in her own childhood. And she had this experience in real time during this
during
session.
The recording. Oh, wow.
And I mean, that's totally that's a version powerful. Of that, that aha,
the
that is so powerful. And I had an email from her the next day. She's like, I haven't stopped thinking about this, that I'm thinking more about my childhood than I have in 30 years. Mm-hmm. And it has this huge impact on who I am in the classroom. And I she was like feeling a little bit guilty about bad choices she made in the classroom before this aha moment. Uh-huh. And, it's those big profound things. So it can be something as small as, oh, Caddy Shack, or it can be this kind of huge thing that goes on.
And I think when it is those, you know, the huge things that goes on, especially when we find that it, like, you know, clearly the realization that the movie is named after the Caddy's Shack, it probably isn't going to profoundly impact my work with early childhood. However, you know, along the way, we have had those ahas where you're like, oh, shoot. And I know I've talked about this on the show is that, you know, if you don't know what you don't know, right? And we know this about our own selves. We know this about parents. We know that if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to hold somebody or to blame anybody or try to make anybody feel guilty because they honestly didn't know. But now that you do know that we have shown the light on it, even though our practice, of course, is not going to completely change overnight, we're probably going to have that pause before going down the path that, although might not be the best choice, is the most familiar path. And so now maybe we might only go 10 steps down that path before mm-hmm. turning back around and making another choice. And I think there's wisdom in the being gentle with ourselves at that point. Oh shit, I went down that path again. But you turned around this time.
Yeah.
You turned around.
Well, we are wired to beat ourselves up over things. And so there are those moments like, oh, why didn't I get this? What a dummy am I? And that kind of stuff. And it's easy to fall into that. I've done it thousands of times, probably in the last week. And being able to be a little bit more forgiving and kind to yourself, like you're saying, is a much more effective path forward.
More effective, more,
because when it comes to making change, mindset matters the whole hell of a lot. And so if we're in that, oh, what an idiot I am kind of mode.
Oh, that's going to be harder, right?
Yeah.
It
puts this tarnish on it and it kind of fogs the path maybe if we're going to stay analogy and being able to let go of that is much more effective. Now, easy to do? No. But it kind of moves us in the right direction.
And I think the frustrating piece is, okay, now hold on. I'm having two thoughts that are converging. So I have openly admitted that occasionally, I mean, my patience, my understanding wears thin when somebody claims to quote unquote know better and still chooses the familiar path simply because it is more familiar or it's easier or it's more comfortable or it's not as challenging to whatever degree. But now I'm wondering, you know, how did I know that person knew better? You know what I'm saying? Like as an outsider, potentially looking in as an observer, perhaps in a classroom, you know, have I perhaps as an adult been just as guilty of thinking, oh my God, they've been doing this now, how they should know better. Well, maybe they honestly didn't know better, you know, or maybe during a conversation they were saying they knew better, but really they didn't know better, you know?
Yeah, because we do that all the time because it's easier to put on that front than to admit you don't know something or don't completely understand something. Mm-hmm. And as adults, we do that all the time. Think about the situation kids are in our environments where they are so brand new to the world and everything is so new to them. They encounter those situations much more frequently than we adults do just because the time we've been around. And if we struggle with it, I think it just realizing that we struggle with it as adults makes it a little bit more easier to understand the struggle going on with kids and creating an environment that can be supportive of it.
Mm-hmm. I like to practice saying, you know, that's a really good question. I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know what? I've never heard that word before, or, you know, I don't know what you mean by that. Like, hey, so it's tax time right now. Right. And, this was the first year that I was, okay, so we're talking like the 2020 calendar year, mm-hmm. was the first year that I, as Lisa Murphy, was 100% responsible for 100% of my business. And to that, I've had, you know, people who were, you know, like my bookkeeper, you know, I've had those other resources that worked for me in the company. Because of the move, I was solo this last year. And so I spent last year asking a lot of questions, like mm-hmm. a lot. And I kind of prefaced my relationship with these new people of like, hey, I am going to be that client this year, that client. And everybody was amazingly supportive. Nobody ever made me feel bad, right? There was no like, oh my God, how long have you been running this company? Like nobody did that. I was worse to myself than anybody else was.
Sure.
Well, now we're wrapping up the year, right? So now we're getting ready. Like I'm having to produce all the end of the year documents for the accountant. And she gave me this list of stuff that I have to give her. And I was like, I typed back, I don't know what this means, period. And then question four, I knew that. Five, six, I don't know what this means. And she emailed back and told me what it meant. And then I was like, oh, and she was just using, now this might be some connection here. She was just using her industry's language. Mm-hmm. Like when she spelled it out, I was like, oh, I know what that is, but I didn't know it in your dialect.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that happen just last night. I was messaging with somebody who works for a provincial training, provincial wide training kind of platform in the Canada, and she had this term she used, and I'm like, okay, well that can mean this or it could mean this, and I know. I know I can tell you places where it means both things. Which one does it mean in your part of the world? And she's like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, now we're both on the same page. Exactly. But being willing to be brave enough to ask those questions when we don't know things is a developed skill. Because like you said, you mentioned you were being worse to yourself than they were being to you. And we do that all the time with everything. And so if in early learning, we should strive to be with children what your tax person was with you, willing to give the information and have the conversation and be supportive without being overly judgmental about the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you mean you don't know what an itemized amortization depreciation? What?
What is that thing?
What does that mean?
Yeah. And being able to,
but it also brings up, I mean, and you know, how many times have we potted about the verbiage piece too, right? Is just, what does that mean to you? What does that mean to me? You know, we do use industry buzzwords when we, you know, hang out with each other and pausing, not making that assumption that just because we all work in the same industry, that we all have the same definitions, just like what you just experienced with that training platform.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the classroom with the kids, I think we should circle back to that aha moment for a little bit, because really the play environment that we talk, preach, rant about creating on this show is an environment supportive of those aha moments. One of the primary goals is to create spaces where kids have those moments of discovery and realization, because I mean, that's learning, right? And how do we become more effective of supporting that and embracing it when it happens?
Well, you can't plan them or coordinate them. That's the first thing you gotta know. Those are very much spontaneous. You know,
it's not something that
we've never heard anybody who's doing a workshop on how to create an aha moment, right? How to put that together. But I think, and I say this in the keynote, you can dedicate your life to setting up environments that become ripe for the opportunity for the children to have those aha moments. I think if we're all up in their business and in the middle of it all the time, I think we become to some degree a speed bump to those moments happening. Or if we think that somehow we try and force those moments, you know, or we try and get, or we see it and we want them to see it, or even a coworker, right? It doesn't even need to be the teacher-child, teacher-student dynamic. It could be, you know, I really want my, like, I can see the potential of where what's unfolding in front of me might go, but I really wish my co-teacher saw it too.
Yeah.
You can't make them want it. I think, I feel it was a little bit of a loaded question, but a play-based environment that is filled with open-ended materials, loose parts, is going, in my belief, to be more conducive for children to have those, like, you know, I got this to work. I got this to stack up. I got, look what I did. Like that, I think is, you know, whereas if I have an environment filled with maybe commercialized toys,
yeah,
the toy is kind of already directing the direction of the play.
Yeah, and the play is built into those toys.
Right. So I think that, you know, I would imagine that the likelihood for a true organic aha moment is more limited in an environment that is more toy based as opposed to open-ended loose part based.
Yeah. My favorite story of that aha moment for the kid, I think I've told on the podcast before, is years ago, Noah was playing with a empty Hershey's syrup container, the squeeze ones, and plastic Easter eggs.
Yeah.
And then out of the blue, he puts the half a plastic Easter egg on top of the container and squeezes it. Oh. And the Easter egg half flies and hits the ceiling. And his eyes bugged out of his head. And my eyes bugged out of my head because I should have said, hey, yeah, that's, of course, that's what's going to happen. But it totally caught me by surprise when I had that realization. And then he does it again. And again, and then everybody needs to do it. And so Tasha runs to the supplies and she grabs four or five more empty Hershey's syrup containers, which means we were consuming too much Hershey's syrup.
Still into the sugar.
Yeah, but it was awesome. And those things are flying all over the place. And it was a great moment of him figuring out a thing. And, you know, we talked. Oh, go ahead.
No, well, I'm going to say, because that's making my brain go in a couple directions. So then often, how often as adults, then we hijack that. We hijack the aha moment and we turn it into a frickin' theme, you know, or we extend it longer than it needs to, you know, because that to me is beautiful, that what you just described. And there are times where then it could morph it into like, what else can I squirt with that air? You know, like what else is light enough for me to send in there? What about her hair? What about the cat? What about? And I always want to just tell adults, like, just don't touch it. Don't touch it.
Yeah.
Leave it alone.
Yeah.
You don't need to, I call it, you don't need to fold, spindle, or mutilate this into anything other than what is organically unfolding in front of you. You can still be 100% engaged and observing and facilitating, like Tasha, right? Go get more of what is currently needed. And if it gets used, awesome. And if it doesn't, you don't need to say anything about it. It could have just been a blip on the radar of this child's day today, or it could morph and grow into something that nobody ever could have seen coming. And as adults, it is, there's wisdom in realizing that you don't have to be the one that directs it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that it's still relevant and meaningful, even if it was only 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Accepting that it could be a tiny little thing that fades away, or it can turn into this big thing, accepting that both are valid results and full of learning is a hard thing to do sometimes.
Not to have to, like, you don't have to make it happen again. You know, mm-hmm. like you don't,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, remember last week when we were squirting this, right? Like they're like, yeah, and we kind of are done with that. Like, what's your point?
Yeah. And I mean, Noah right now is in his late teens, and I'm pretty confident he doesn't remember that moment the way that I do, and nor should he. But as his whole life so far, he's had that kind of curiosity and willingness to explore, mostly because the adults around him have been supportive of it and haven't tried to push. Mm-hmm. And that's a big piece of this. I saw another version of this the other day. Think about this. A little girl is outside. I'm out with the hounds, and she's, you know how you've been in Florida maybe too long. You don't remember this maybe, but you know how there'll be ice and then the water under the ice evaporates. And so you end up with a thin layer of ice with nothing below it.
Yeah.
And then when you're a kid stepping on that, it makes
the crack
crunch. Yeah. And so she found an area and she's doing that. And she's just gently with her toes kind of cracking away at it. And her adult, I think it was dad, I'm not sure, standing by and just stand and let it happen, because look, she's engaged and quiet and not begging him to be on his iPhone for the moment. And so he's totally cool with it, but she's having this, oh, this is how thin ice works. And yeah. It's that same kind of flash in her head that made it happen.
We used to, it was a boot thing. It was a heel of the boot was what we used.
You just got, yeah.
With the heel.
Yeah.
And there would be a race to the bus stop to who got the best one,
the best ice to smash. Yeah, because sometimes it's too thick and you got to really work to smush it, and sometimes it's almost paper thin. Lots to explore there with ice. And I think this kind of thing, when we talk about, you know, I mean, STEM is still a buzzword. I don't know if it should be or not, but it is. But when we're talking about real STEM learning, having these kinds of experiences is much more valuable than sitting down and doing STEM lessons at kids.
Well, and that's my point of the STEM rant, is that, you know, if we, back when we did have environments that were for the most part filled with those open-ended loose part materials, kids were engaged in science, technology, engineering, and math without anybody needing to do it to them, without anybody needing to carve out a 30-minute STEM lesson.
Well, that. Yeah. I think it's good to throw out the reminder out that the humans that invented spaceships that can make it to the moon and iPhones are people
who
for the most part didn't go to preschool. They played. So I think that's a good thing to remember. Hey, Lisa Murphy, I was wondering, the movie Star Wars, heard of that?
Yeah.
Did you get that there was a war going on in the stars?
That one I knew. That one I knew. That one I knew. Yeah, who knew?
Well, this has been fun. Any final thoughts on this one? I think it's that moment.
This is why I trust that I can come in with a little thing and it turns into a podcast.
I think trusting that aha moment and realizing that self-judgment that might come with it can be a thing, but if we let that go, we're more supportive of moving forward and taking advantage of the new discovery and integrating it into who we are and what we know, and that's probably a good thing. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.